A warm welcome from Amsterdam, and thanks for tuning in to a new episode of Game Consultant. Your host of today is Reinout.
Hello and welcome to episode number 7, Game Consultant. It was quite a week, I would say. Lots of rumors, and in the end, it got confirmed. GDC has been delayed. And right away, that makes me think, like, how can you delay such an event at large? So we have so many gaming events anyways. And during the summer, it's, I think, what is their next option? Bearing in mind that we have Gamescom in Cologne. Very interesting event. Lots of people are going there. And talking to some people in the industry, we all agree that we actually have two main events, I would say GDC and Gamescom. And in both cases, lots of people around the world are actually traveling towards these conferences. So if GDC would actually prepping something like, let's say, July or something, I think a lot of people will come to a point where they have to choose whether they go to San Francisco or to Cologne in Germany. In any case, I read up on a few things and I've seen a few things like online events, which I will discuss a little bit later during this episode. But anyways, today, latest news, gaming in Israel by Guy, startup in gaming. Daniel of Colibri Games is telling me some nice ins and outs. A student apartment. Oh, man. They've done really well. Another game consultant, Jay. And companies to watch, we have Utomic, Anzu, and Cardell. And Cardell actually, it's all about Africa, the continent of Africa, emerging market. So, it was also the week where we actually did read about Roblox raising $150 million. I mean, really good. So let's roll. So every week I want to make a selection of some news items that I saw passing by. And what I was just saying, Roblox raised $150 million. Series G of George. I mean, how about that? It's Andreessen Horowitz that has valued the company on $4 billion. And so for people that don't know, Roblox is an online gaming platform. And about, I would say, 100 million, 110 million players per month. And the company will also open a tender offer for up to 350 million of common and preferred shares. So lots of movement over there. Something I will definitely dive into next week or the week after to see if I can get some feedback from the company itself. But one paragraph was very interesting that landed in my inbox. The funding comes at a period of significant growth for this platform. Just last summer, it was being visited by 100 million users, topping Minecraft and its developer community. Over 2 million actives earned 110 million in 2019, up from around 70 million in 2018 and 40 million in 2017. So from 40 to 70 to 110. I call that very nice growth. Then I had something else. So we talked a bit about GDC and events that are being done. There are some online events, and also I read up about Plan B, which is happening. It's Meet and Match. The guys are coming up with something. I will put all those links on the site. Dirk Schmidt, obviously with BizTech, He was planning already something with San Francisco and gaming. So now there is a free event that you can attend March 16 to 20. So all in all, though GDC has been canceled for now, and whenever it's going to be organized, we'll see. There are appearing a couple of options. I saw Jay coming with an online event, Jay Powell, which I will discuss later on who Jay is and what he's doing. But I, like I said, Fedor, Meet and Match, Dirk of Game Biztech. So various things. And then, of course, people that will travel to San Francisco anyways. They can meet in bars, hotels, wherever. And the interesting part is that then I'm going ahead with some news. GameDev.world will raise money to provide relief for developers affected by GDC postponement. GameDev.world is a non-profit group dedicated to creating online events for game developers. And they actually announced that it will raise money for indie developers that have been affected. And I guess that will be a shitload of them. GDC normally being visited by 30,000 people. As said, it's been delayed. So, yeah, I think as an industry, and I wrote a small post on LinkedIn, it's not only the indie developers that we should look after, but also the game, the event organizers. Or for that matter, the game event organizers. Well said, Ryan. Thank you. I do think that a lot of these organizations, people that work for months and on an event, this is also disastrous for them. I mean, I don't know in which shape and form GDC will be organized, but it's going to be different, I guess. And am I going to miss it? Yes, we're going to miss it. Is it different in July or August? Yes, it is. And if I have to choose between Cologne and San Francisco, yeah, I do opt, I think, for Cologne. Less travel, easier to reach, of course. Yeah, well, for a lot of Europeans, it might be more the Gamescom. So I hope both events will actually communicate with each other and do what is best for the industry. So let's park GDC for now. But to all the event organizers out there, if you have troubles or you would like to give your feedback, do contact me. And like I said, I think as an industry, we need to assist or help or support all those event organizers anyways. Here we go. Big shout out to Karma Games. I've been following them for quite a few years and they're very known from the game Pokerist. Their revenues actually went up to almost $91 million in 2019. And that came up from about $65 million. Company is based Dublin, so Ireland, social casino game company. And about 8% in growth. So they're doing very well. They're privately held. And what I'm reading, Andrew, who is the CEO, said in an interview, it exceeded its own forecast in profitability. Well, I think he's using that sentence for the last 2 to 3 years. So, Andre, here's on for 2020. I hope you can use the sentence in 2021 again. That leaves me with some other news that I've found. Interesting. Always about data. Epic raised questions about the figures of Superdata. They basically claim that Superdata has repeatedly published inaccurate numbers. And I assume that it's more disturbing for Epic that they are projecting that numbers are declining. Although I'm not reading if Epic is saying that it's the other way or it has stagnated. What they are saying is we are disappointed that Superdata has repeatedly published inaccurate reports about Fortnite based on what we believe is questionable methodology, actually. That is questionable. Superdata responded. They responded to gamesindustry.biz saying, what are they saying? Let me look. Oh, yeah, saying it has a proven methodology and a validation process and standing behind its previously reported Fortnite numbers. Yeah, interesting. You know, it's sort of a reference. I mean, my friends over at Newzoo, they launch reports like Superdata, and yeah, obviously they can't look into the quote-unquote kitchen of all these game developers, but they have some references. And how should an industry use these kind of numbers? Obviously, I'm seeing those numbers daily in pitch decks, presentations, press releases, you name it. Sometimes I'm really thinking like, oh God, really? But for the last 1 or 2 years, we can say that revenues have been staggering. More games, more revenues are being made in this industry. And lately, I see a lot of reports from both companies about esports, because that's hot property right now. I have a little thing that I want to mention on that after this. But both and some other companies, so Superdata, Newzoo, and others, are sending these reports to the media. The media is writing about it. And I would say to all the analysts out there, myself, I think we use it as a reference. Are they exact data? I don't know. But in fact, I don't care. As long as I see it's projecting that it's going up, that's good. It gives an idea of how different kind of games are coming along during the last months and what is the prediction for the upcoming months. So all in all, quite interesting. But in detail, I'm not so sure if I can trust these numbers. So Newzoo and Superdata, prove me wrong. Next. Yeah, Katowice goes without an audience, and that's all about esports. And that brings me, well, I can tell so much. I actually saw a video. Where did I see the video? I think I saw it on LinkedIn, and it was an empty hall and a stage, and the stage looked superb. Really, that's something that ASL is doing extremely well. It was empty. So, very curious how that actually will come along. And then moving on to something else. On LinkedIn, I saw that Phil, who is head of gaming at Facebook, said something about PAX. And a minor part of it, I want to go a little bit more in detail. So his findings about PAX, everyone is talking about the coronavirus, or in this case, was. Talking about coronavirus, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, 220 marketing efforts, falling stock market. Then, streamers are overwhelmingly more platform loyal. And that's interesting. With, for example, Ninja going to Mixer. It's something I would like to know more about. So anyone out there, if you have an opinion, let me know. Lots of self-identification with their platform. Sony wasn't there. So as he is describing, more time and visibility for indies. VR was present, but it felt less than the year before. That's what I'm hearing more and more. Then he's writing something that I'm not going to say yet. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay, I'm going to... most new interesting busy tech was laser focused on esports, tournaments, betting, content distribution, scorekeeping, data, and all. And that's interesting. Because he actually came back with a point that I think a lot of people are maybe not seeing, or they're not familiar with esports in general. They only see the highlights, and that's what I was saying for a long time. Yeah, whenever you see something on social media, it's pretty much a highlight. And that's what I like from two people that are actually online and trying to trying to explain esports more in general. The two that I'm actually following, Chris Smith, he's an esports gaming influencer, as he calls himself, and Chris Reed. And Chris Reed, actually, esports tech startup advisor, content creator. He's doing a podcast like me, but he's doing it mostly on LinkedIn. And actually, compliments to him, because I actually see quite an audience on his shows on LinkedIn. But I would definitely follow these two guys if you want to know more about esports. But hey, here it comes. Esports had a lot of issues in the industry that the industry is ignoring. There's a huge mid-season issue where teams only get massive attention during world championships. It's a hard narrative to follow throughout the year. It's hard to monetize because the reach of most esports teams are small, but compared when compared to influencers. And many esports games are hard to follow unless you are a hardcore gamer. I feel like everyone in the esports industry is trying to solve problem number 374 before they solve problem number two. You know, I think I know something about esports, but this is something that I've been hearing more and more. Although we say it's for the mass, the professional side of things, it's really for the hardcore user gamer. There are a lot of also indie teams out there that I think find it difficult to survive, and it remains sort of a hobby. So brings me to think that I actually should make an episode all about esports and where different kind of people can comment. I mean, are you an indie team? Do you make money? Or is it a hobby? Is it fun? Is it maybe now starting to be annoying that you can't actually make it to a league or a final? More stakeholders from the esports industry to get a sense of esports in general. So that's about the news, besides the fact that Endgame Interactive closed 3 million seats. Why am I saying this? Well, it was led by Makers Funds. So the investment will be used to develop cross-platform multiplayer games, something I always very much like. Additional investors include Supercell, Unity founder and CEO. No, that's not CEO, right? Games industry. He was the Unity founder. Is the Unity founder and was the CEO, David Helgeson, and the Twitch founders, founder Kevin Lin. So I think that sums it up for the news of this week. Oh yeah, Facebook cancels their conference. Apparently they have also growing concerns. So I guess that's not hot topics anymore. If there are any events in the next upcoming weeks, maybe 2 months from now, most likely they will be canceled. So my advice, check on your tickets, see if it's refundable, and stay safe and healthy. That's normally how I always would end my episode, but this ends the news part. It's longer than usual, but as said, I'm still learning and still working on my format, and this was news that I really wanted to share. A long-time game veteran. That's basically how I can call Jay Powell. The Powell Group, a video game consulting firm. And they're focused on business development, publishing, support, and licensing. And I reached out to him. Wanted to know a little bit more about his activities. What is he doing? Why is he doing it? And so one of the bad, what he says is, when I did ask him, like, what are you doing? How should we see it? And then he says, well, someone who helps companies of all sizes and getting their message outside, reach the right target audience, and get them the best deals and partners for the product. And I think with having his experience, he's a good man for the job. So we went on, because I wanted to know, how is your agenda look like on a daily basis? And his answer was, no 2 days are the same. I'm sure you know that as well. And yes, Jay, I know. Coffee and reading, a general starts the day. Everything from business and consumer game news to business articles. Then I do pass through my email, answering anything urgent and setting others off to later in the day. From there, I may be consulting with clients, talking to prospective new clients, or building relationships with new companies. His team is actually taking care of most of the pitching of products, and Jay's focusing on new clients and building the new relationships. So, all these years in gaming, tell me your fun experiences. His answer is, I've been doing this more than 20 years. 20 years. I've forgotten more fun times than I remember at this point. These days, just producing our podcast is more fun than I've had in a decade. Jay, I can relate to it. I get to share what I know and what people and what the people I've worked with for 15 to 20 years that they know. And we don't have to put on a suit and travel to a conference to do just that. And that's actually really funny. It's sort of the same. I started to do the podcast. I don't know why, but one day to another, I thought, like, you know, I'm going to check it out. I found an app, and now actually it's a little bit more work than I anticipated on, but it's fun to do so. It's fun to send out some messages to people and say, hey, would you like to give me some feedback? And besides that, I'm still learning. I hope that everyone who's listening is learning or is getting to know new people and will reach out to them if it's relevant. So I can completely relate to what Jay was saying here. How are you looking at the game industry at the moment? And I wanted to know, concerning growth type of games, his opinion. Well, his first line was was saying it. Same shit, different day. Smiley. There are always changes in the industry, but there's an awful lot that doesn't change and people don't think about it. The industry is in a good place. There's a lot of great games coming from smaller companies and there's plenty of space for them if the developers approach it in the correct way. VR is starting to take a good hold and it's getting to a point that it's affordable. Subscriptions are opening the long tail. That's interesting. Something that we want to discuss a little bit more in an episode or two from now. So subscriptions are opening the long tail of sales back for the teams, up for the teams that manage it appropriately. Streaming has the potential to get any game out there in front of millions, and streamers make awesome playtesters as well. Most importantly, developers have options, lots of options. I agree. Different kind of marketing techniques. Lastly, do you have some advice for gaming studios? Typical Jay, very clear. When you don't enjoy it anymore, stop. Think about that. None of us got into the industry because it was the highest paying job we were looking at. We do this because we love games, we love making games, we love playing games, and we love watching other people play our games. If it isn't fun anymore, step back and re-evaluate. Jay, first of all, thanks for answering my questions. And secondly, you can really tell that you have 20 years of experience. If you look today at all the options that game developers have, in a way, the industry has become more competitive. But on the other hand, you have exactly what he was saying, so many more options than in the beginning of the industry starting to grow. Again, Jay, thanks, and let's keep in close contact. A couple of weeks ago, we all saw the news of Colibri Games being acquired by Ubisoft. I met Daniel during a game conference in Cologne, Gamescom. We we had a chat, and he was sitting very relaxed. Actually, we were sitting at a Dorint Hotel, which is across the convention, and it was nice sunny weather. And we're sitting at a table, and that's what I do more often. I have a large table with chairs, and people just sit down and talk. And I do my meetings, introduce other people. That's what I like to do anyways. And you got great conversations. And so I reached out right after that acquisition. In fact, I reached out a little bit before, and Sneaky Daniel then said, no, nothing's cooking. And then a week later, there was the news. Smartass. Anyways, the questions I did ask, like, when did you start Colibri? In 2016, he said, in a student flat in Karlsruhe. My German. Ganz gut, now. We were a couple of students with high hopes, a little entrepreneurial experience, and lots of ambition. We started an overly ambitious game, failed miserably, started over, and created what became Idle Miner Tycoon. This is actually why I like the idea of having an item startup in gaming, because I've also seen some feedback from investors, how they actually look at pitch decks and how they then try to get a sense if a company could be successful. And one of the things I always tell, and which I read up on from an investor, was like, okay, so we don't believe the first game will be the super hit. It's more like learnings. The second should actually show that experience of the team is starting to work, some revenues, and then the third should really do it. It's an interesting way of how you look at a young gaming company. Anyways, it right away also led up to the question, why did you start a company? It was a most natural thing. Everything we had done at the point was trying to find out how we could start a successful company. We never even considered to start a proper career. If Colibri had failed, we would have to try something else. And that's exactly my point. You just need to do. You need to overcome failings. You need to keep trying. And keep your hopes also up. As Jay also said, if it ain't any fun anymore, then quit. Can you share a fun moment? The company started operations in the flat that Janosz and I shared. We brought the other founders in, started working. We hired our first intern, so quite a few people filled the flat during work hours. Then the landlord came by to check on why all the people were going in and out and if something illegal was going on. It's not allowed to house commercial operations in a student flat. We simply told him that we're a group, a study group, preparing for exams. But this didn't work, and we got a letter from his lawyer. Okay, that's actually, you always have the thing of we started at the kitchen table. I can relate to that. And but it's fun. Start at minimum. Have low cost, as they call it, bootstrap. And yeah, sometimes you have this little challenge, but that's to overcome. Any advice for other gaming entrepreneurs? And guess what? Never give up. Never accept a no. Go the whole nine yards if you really want to start a company. Ask for advice. Pick the minds of others. Thank you, Daniel. But never accept advice blindly. And that's something too. It takes entrepreneurial spirit. So you have a lot of people that are trying to give you the best advice. And it's good that you actually look in your network, talk to people. And that's exactly why gaming conferences are so very important. You get to see lots of people. And I think it's because of you are not only doing the one-on-ones, but you meet people in a group, sometimes for a dinner or for a drink. And then you get the informal talks. And the informal talks are the most valuable in the industry. They basically show you the ups and downs that people are facing. And to that, I think really happy that although GDC is being delayed, there are still other options, as I mentioned earlier in this episode. Daniel, good luck with Ubisoft, and thank you very much for answering these questions. Gaming in Israel. I wanted to make that item already for quite a while. But in the end, there were a few other items that I had already on the shelf. And so I reached out to Guy. Guy is CEO of Uzo Games and chairman of GameIS. I have his link, obviously, on my site, so you can check him out. So here we go. I wanted to know who are the most leading game developers in Israel. And Israel's success is mostly around mobile games. The biggest publishers are Playtika, known from Slotomania, and owning other publishers like Wooga. Wooga in Germany, Berlin. There goes my German again. Plarium, Midcore Games, Ilion Casual, but is bought by Miniclip recently. Crazy Labs, it was used to be Taptail, Hyper Casual. Moon Active is casual. There are over 50 others with smaller games. Well, he's already giving me an answer on any titles from Israel that we should know about, but he's giving a few more. Raid from Plarium, Coinmaster from Moon Active. They are in the news these days. Another item that will appear in some of the next episodes, it's about the investment climate per country. I want to pay some attention to several countries around the globe and get to know how governments are actually supporting the games industry. I read an article recently about New Zealand, how the government over there is saying that they support gaming, but in essence, it turns down to zero. How is the investment climate in Israel? Due to recent exits in the last few years, you would see more angels coming into the market. A few new VCs emerged to cater the market, like Reimagine and Caden. The top investor, we all know, is Gigi Levy from NFX. Is the indie scene vibrant, meaning lots of new studios in Israel? Yes. Israel is a startup nation, and that echoes into the game market. There are also new schools with game development programs like Shankar and Tilton. Most new studios focus on mobile, but some go to PC and Nintendo Switch. Interesting also, development programs in schools. A very interesting topic, something that I think should be done more and better in the schooling system or systems around the globe. Anything special that we should know about and that is happening in Israel concerning gaming? Israel's gaming market is new. It's data-oriented. It is affected by the broader high-tech market, both in terms of processes, funding, and goals. Israel is also expensive to live in, so a lot of the scale of development is done in Central Europe. Traditionally, Israel is more tech-oriented than content-oriented, and you can find here the market leaders such as IronSource, AppsFlyer, Singular, Fiber, keeping their headquarters and top management in Israel. AppsFlyer, recently in the news, raised a bunch load of funding, so doing really well. And IronSource, if I'm correct, actually started a game studio. Any other relevant input that you would like to tell me about it? You have to get to Israel and see all these amazing publishers, indies, and marketing talent at our Game IS yearly conference, which is on May the 6th, 2020. So, Game IS, the conference on May 6th, 2020. If you would like to know more, go to gameisconf.com. Obviously, the link will be on my site. Hey, Guy, thank you very much. And I'm taking up on your invite and showing up anytime soon in Israel. I want to thank you for answering these questions and talk soon. Cheers. So the last item already, again, the companies to watch on my watch list. Starting off by and with Utomic, utomic.com. Doki Tops, CEO, I did send him some questions and ask him like, hey, tell me more about Utomic. Utomic was founded by a great team of four who have been in the industry since 2005. Doki, Mark, Richard, and Rob. With a background in free-to-play, tech, MMO, and indie game development. It is a Netflix for games like gaming subscription service running on its own. Instant play download technology and started 2014 and are one of the pioneers of gaming subscription. Currently, 30 people within the company. You get 1,000 games in one subscription from all kinds of genres, ranging from classic AAA, Batman, Lego, Metro, to indie, to casual, and fresh day one content, such as Chaos Bane and The Search. We curate our content, but an indie can apply too. So you have to go to utomic.com/developers to apply for it. Getting onto our platform requires zero effort for developers. We are doing all the work. We can work with DRM free or Steam builds. We prefer Steam. We can ensure that features such as leaderboards, achievements, cloud saves, and multiplayer all keep working within our platform as well. Utomic partners for promotion with the likes of HP and has a U-bundle concept where Utomic can get bundled into cloud gaming services or other subscription models. That's it. That sounds very simple. So I know Utomic, they're from the Netherlands, and I'm in Amsterdam, and they are in the south. And I know Utomic for their great tech. And since the last really 12, 14 months, when everyone is talking about cloud online streaming, I think they're in the right moment of time. And I like it when they say, we're Netflix for games. Doki, thank you very much. And keep me posted on things that are happening with your company. Next. Another special company is Carry First. I got introduced to Cordell by a friend of mine who used to live in South America, but these days living in Tokyo, Matthias. And so Cordell, what is exactly Carry First? He's the co-founder of a leading mobile game publisher in Africa. Originally from Sierra Leone, his family had to fled to the US during a civil war in the 90s. And through hard work and good fortune, as he calls it, he ended up at Stanford University and dedicated his life to making major difference in his home country and broader African continent. He has spent his career in finance to begin with, but most recently he was helping to launch the first African private equity fund by a major global player, the Carlyle Group. While working with the Carlyle and living in Nigeria, he became fascinated by the emerging tech startup scene and convinced of the immense opportunity in interactive mobile. Interesting. Lately, I'm being approached more and more by people that are looking into this continent, Africa. And talking to Cordell, I also found out that if you look at the whole continent, about 400 to 500 million people have a first language, English. He has become obsessed, in a positive way, with trying to bridge the gap between the best digital content in the world and a massive, fast-growing and a fast and vibrant region that is deeply underserved. More about the company and its mission. Carry First is on a mission to build the dominant mobile publisher in Africa, starting with games. We leverage proprietary technology and local capabilities to scale the key distribution / monetization challenges in our region. Our market has over 1.3 billion people. That's quite a lot, guys. In 2019, we self-published a number one game across three largest English-speaking markets. We won the award as the top media and entertainment solution in Africa by Apps Africa, sponsored by Tencent. And we were named one of the top 10 startups to watch by VentureBeurre. We aim to be the Garena of Africa. And Garena, obviously, is an Asian company. Check it out, Google it, and learn more about it. What to expect in 2020? You can expect us to see us publish our first co-developed and third-party titles in Africa, and we will announce partnerships with some major players in the game industry. Funding, tell me more about it. Our new funding will be used to enhance our platform technology and marketing teams, as well as provide a war chest to deploy for user acquisition to scale games we published this year. I sort of got between the lines that he is about to close or has closed a round of funding between 2 and 3 million. Cordell, tell me if that's the case or not. As we, the gaming industry, how should we look at Africa, the continent, and gaming? Africa is the youngest and fastest growing population in the world, with an average age of 19 years old. In 2025, there will be 2 times the number of smartphones connections in Africa than all of North America. And most importantly, Africa consumers love to have fun, socialize, and play games as much I would love to argue that any other group of people that I have encountered across 5 continents. It's not a matter if gaming will explode, it's rather when. Interesting. Cordell, thank you. I have the link on my site, Carry First. And for all the gaming people out there, do check it out if you think that Africa could be a potential for you. And obviously, Cordell can tell you how he can integrate your games in order to reach this amazing audience of 1.3 billion. The last of the three, Anzu. And first of all, special thanks to Natalia. She actually was in the CC when I did ask Itamar, the CEO, if he could answer some questions. So I got a very nice Word document back from her that is quite extensive. So I will get some highlights out of her explanation of Anzu. Israeli company, and it started its operation in 2017 when Itamar teamed up with Ben Fenster, who is now the CPO, and Michael, the CTO. They initiated a new age ad platform for both brands and game developers. All three of us come from a long history of working into the ad tech and gaming space. That I have to add. At some point, we realized that gaming had become an attractive space for digital advertisers. Yet, brands stayed away from fully exploring this medium because of intrusive ad nature and the lack of scalable tech solutions. Game developers, too, were reluctant to open their games to ads because of the fear of disrupting user experience. I did ask him also about the company itself, like culture, people. The answer I got is that Anzu is a fast-growing startup and we're all very passionate about what we do. On the tech side, we are always innovating to explore how we can best utilize cutting-edge technologies to better serve our clients. That's why the products we offer are in many ways unique than in the gaming space, the in-game space. I'm sorry for that. Whether it is full stack solution, our patent pending 3D ad tracker, or the battle tested secure SDK. We are building solutions that support our vision of a better ecosystem. On the business front, we have forged a number of successful partnerships with well-known game studios and Fortune 500 brands, as well as got many industry leaders to join us as advisors to take us growth forward. Interesting when we talk about the offices, because I'm actually reading through it and they say we opened offices in Israel and Germany, as well as expanded our operations to Europe and North America. Our passion has been recognized, winning us awards such like Sprocket, Best Monetization Company to 19, Viva Tech Orange Lab to 19, Pocket Gamer Mobile Games Awards to 20, and a number of others. Anzu's growth has got the trust and backup of the industry giants, Bitcraft Esports Ventures, WPP, Axel Springer Digital Ventures, that led our round A of funding. I think they're in a good position. That's what they say. Okay, then answer me next. What makes Anzu so special? Well, Natalia did a good job. We are the pioneers in the in-game advertising market, offering technologies and services that were previously unavailable. With our blended advertising solution, we provide brands access to top console games that never showed ads before. In a market that consists mainly of static ad formats, we are bringing advanced ad units in IIB recognized formats and serve them, making it scalable than before, programmatically making it scalable than before. That's how I should say it. We are the first in a new market to bring ad viewability in-game through our partnership with Sheck. Just a few weeks ago, Anzu announced collaboration with Forensic, the MRC-accredited ad fraud detection solution, to bring for the first time ad fraud detection in-game. well done. Any of your clients? Well, basically, solid partnerships with top game developers, leading agencies and brands. We have exclusive partnerships with game developers like Top Leaf Productions and Vivid Games, who have integrated our technology in a number of their games across platforms. We've just published the results of a pilot campaign in collaboration with Shaq for a multinational consumer brand that saw 23% increase in viewability and compared to traditional digital advertising. We are proud of our wide networks of trusted third-party partners, Forensic, Check, eLeak, that already were mentioned, but also TrueOptic, the data management platform for console gaming. On the financial side, they're a bit careful. I can understand that. Funding-wise, I just had that topic. To 20. How is it looking? It's an important year for us, and we're ready to conquer the world. Smiley. Of course you are. Enzo has already made some great advancements with what we offer to the industry, and we continue to innovate. It's a pretty exciting time, as we are in the 100% growth stage, and we're growing in all directions. We had a great start of the year, and we announced a collaboration with Vivid Games and Forensic and shared great results. More in the pipeline. Stay tuned, they say. So, obviously, keep me posted. Quick question for them, but that's actually, I did ask that question during the week, and we all know that GDC has been delayed. But evidently, the employees' health and well-being is the utmost importance for the company. With the recent GDC's announcement, the question is not that relevant. True. I got to meet up with Itamar through Guy, who I actually had earlier in this episode, and I've been following them for quite a while, and obviously they have done really good job in explaining who they are and what they do. I'll put the whole script answers that Natalia has given me on my website in the beginning of this week, and you can read up on it and obviously check them out on the link anzu.io. Thanks, Itamar and Natalia, for helping me with these questions. So that was all for this week, but I'm not letting you go before I actually wanted to say something about what I read on LinkedIn. David, the co-CEO of ASL, he posted an article and said, Katowice 220, no visitors allowed inside. Heartbreaking, but safety first. The show goes on. The team doubled the efforts to deliver epic content. Awesome to watch on the usual platforms. And I did ask him, what do you expect in the next weeks or months? Because, yeah, this is just one event. But what to expect? He did answer. We will continue to bring our employees, players, and visitors safety first, and adapt to the new situation around the world. Esports can adjust very fast. The digital broadcast for IEM Katowice is breaking all audience record despite all the 11th hour odds. So good for ASL, good for Katowice. Interesting enough, also good for esports that you can watch it on any given platform. So I want to thank you all for listening today. I think I'm coming more and more to a format that I'm actually liking, going quickly through the notes that I'm getting from people. Obviously, I'm getting a lot of info that I can't actually use, because otherwise this podcast would take 3 hours. But I do hope that you like that I'm basically covering things that I'm seeing on LinkedIn. You might have seen it too, but sometimes I'm responding, getting interesting feedback, which I will then use in my podcast. For now, I want to thank you all on Sunday, March the 1st. And again, give me feedback. I love it. I'm always responsive, as you can see. And a next episode next week. Ciao for now.
This was all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Game Consultant. Tune in next week for a brand new episode. And remember, do share this podcast with other members of the games industry.